Hello, everyone. I declare the meeting of the Future Melbourne Committee meeting number 52 on Tuesday, the 19th of March 2019, open at 5:30 p.m. I welcome all councillors, management and members of the public to the City of Melbourne this evening. We respectfully acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, the Boonwurrung and Woiwurrung Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and pay our respects to their elders past and present. For the Kulin Nation, Melbourne has always been an important meeting place for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. Today, we are proud to say that Melbourne is still a significant gathering place for all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. I take this opportunity to notify members of the public that this meeting is being streamed live, and it's live on the City of Melbourne's website. An audio and video recording will also be published on the Council's website by close of business tomorrow. Whilst we do try to avoid filming members of the public who are in attendance this evening, there is a possibility that your image may be inadvertently captured as part of the proceedings this evening, so please be aware that that may happen as part of our live stream. The unconfirmed minutes of this meeting will also be available from the City of Melbourne's website as soon as practicable. Should you have any queries relating to the conduct of this meeting, the documentation or the submission process, please speak to a member of our business council team after the meeting. I request that all mobile phones be turned to silent for the duration of the meeting, just checking mine. And I note that the agenda comprises four reports from management and one item of general business. We do have an apology this evening from Councillor Jackie Watts. I advise members of the committee and the public that where the committee makes a decision on the basis of fewer than six members voting in favour of it, then that decision and matter may be referred to Council for decision. At this point, on behalf of councillors and the City of Melbourne, we wanted to just make a statement given the events of last Friday. We would like to offer our sincere condolences to the people of Christchurch following the horrific attacks that occurred there last Friday afternoon. We were left sickened and speechless at the extreme acts of violence, particularly against the Muslim community in their sacred places of worship. We stand in solidarity with the City of Christchurch at one of its darkest moments, and we send our deepest sympathies to the entire community, especially family and friends of the victims and the survivors. We have written to the Mayor of Christchurch, Leanne Dalziel, and also to the New Zealand Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, on behalf of the City of Melbourne, offering assistance should they need it, as well as, of course, expressing our deepest sympathies in their time of grief. Over the weekend, the City of Melbourne lowered its flags to half-mast, and we lit up Town Hall in the colours of the New Zealand flag. Last night, at a candlelight vigil on the steps of our State Library, thousands of Melburnians gathered to show support for Muslim people and for New Zealand, to share their grief and to seek comfort together in the aftermath of this tragedy. As you all know, we have also experienced unacceptable crimes of hate and extremism in recent years. At these times, we've also seen how people can come together from all cultures and faiths. They draw closer in support of each other, united by a shared sense of decency and humanity. The courageous people of Christchurch are also responding in this way. Above all, we believe our cities must remain committed to nurturing diverse, cohesive, caring communities and reinforcing a sense of belonging and purpose for all. There is, of course, always more that we can do in this regard, but at times when parts of our community feel threatened by extreme behaviours, I remember my favourite part of our national anthem, which is in the second verse, which is rarely sung, but it reminds us that in Australia we have boundless plains to share, and that with courage let us all combine to advance Australia fair and a fair Australia. This is the best way that we can respond to acts such as those that were perpetrated in Christchurch. Our hearts are with everyone impacted. Thank you. Agenda item 2 this evening is about disclosures of conflicts of interest. If any councillor has either a direct or an indirect interest as defined in the Local Government Act 1989 in relation to a matter to be considered by the committee this evening, please disclose the type and nature of your interest prior to consideration of the item. Agenda item 3, confirmation of minutes of previous meeting. I call on a councillor to move a resolution adopting the minutes of open meeting number 51 that was held on Tuesday, the 5th of March 2019. Councillor Oak, thank you. Moved by Councillor Rees, seconded by Councillor Rees, thank you. I'm now putting councillors this motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hand. That's unanimous, so I declare that motion carried. Thank you. Matters arising from the previous meeting. Councillors, are there any matters arising from that meeting that you would like to discuss at this time? None. Thank you very much. Now, the following submissions have been received in accordance with Council's Meeting Procedures Code. Agenda item 6.1, which is Planning Permit Application TP-2018-774, 132 to 138 Little Bourke Street, Melbourne. There are requests to speak from Claire MacArthur, Martin Chan, Gary Wissenden, Hanson Partnership on behalf of a number of objectors, Jovian Sue and Daniel Susan from Tract Consultants on behalf of the applicant. There are items of correspondence that have been received from Tate Brady, Ken Henry, who is the hotel manager of Mantra on Russell, Claire MacArthur, Martin Chan, Gary Wissenden, David Jarm, Jovian Sue, David Yu and Daniel Susan from Tract Consultants. In relation to agenda item 6.2, which is Ministerial Planning Referral TPD-2010-9/C, 695 to 699 Latrobe Street, Docklands, there have been requests to speak from James Pearce of Fender Katsalidis and Lloyd Elliott from Urbis. I advise submitters that you will be invited to address the committee at the time that the relevant agenda item is considered. The way it works is that you'll have 3 minutes to present. It is the intention of the committee to adhere to the 3-minute time limit. And the way that we help you to manage time is that we use this counter clock on the wall. It will beep at 2 minutes to signify 1 minute remaining. It beeps again then at the end of the 3 minutes, at which time you'll be asked to finalise and take your seat. It's a wonderful, respectful way for everybody to have a chance to speak and to listen to all of the other speakers and for us to be able to move through the agenda in a timely manner. So thank you for your adherence and understanding of that protocol. Now, the next item is item 5, which is public questions. In accordance with the Council's Meeting Procedures Code, we allow a 15-minute period at the start of every meeting and at the end of every meeting to receive questions from the public. The point of these periods is to ask questions, not make submissions. And we would ask that if you have a question, that it's no greater than 90 seconds in duration, and that if you do have a submission, that you please make it at the appropriate time rather than using public question time. So I'm going to ask at this point, if you do have a question, if you can put your hand up, we'll get names and then we'll ask people to come up to the podium one at a time. So if you have questions at this time of the meeting, please raise your hand. One, please come to the podium and name, thank you, and turning the microphone on at the bottom there. Thanks, Keith. Name and then question would be fabulous. Thank you.
Greg Bizanella from the East Melbourne Group. Firstly, I'd just like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land upon which we meet. Past actions by people and government who settled here 250 years ago have created much disconnection, suffering for these people who have been on this land for over 50,000 years. I hope that the continued raising of this will create a level of awareness and discussion that will provide the impetus for further change, redress the disconnection and suffering that continues to be experienced, and bring about harmony and a true sense of community that is inclusive and supportive of all cultures, past and present. I do understand this is part of the Melbourne future Melbourne is striving for. My questions relate to aircraft issues and the action points raised in the minutes of the last future Melbourne meetings. So, Lord Mayor and councillors, on behalf of inner Melbourne residents and resident groups, I would like to place on record our appreciation of Council for including the aircraft issue in the call to parties as outlined in the minutes of the last future Melbourne meeting. We are grateful for your response to something which is causing a lot of suffering and distress for people, and you should be proud for this advocacy as it shows leadership amongst capital cities councils throughout Australia. I know the citizens of other municipalities in adjacent suburbs are also approaching their local councils. So my question is whether the City of Melbourne has had a response from call to parties. And also, are you able to collaborate with other city councils in redressing the safety, amenity and lifestyle impacts on residents?
Greg, good. Thank you for your question and your commitment and enthusiasm for this topic. And it's certainly reflected in our endeavours as well. You may know that the call to parties is actually being considered by Council this evening, so it's on our agenda. And once that's considered by Council and approved or not as a result of the discussion this evening, it will then, if approved, be sent to the parties. And we will then keep in touch with them in relation to a response. So we don't have any formal responses from parties at this point, but we will certainly keep in touch with you in relation to this item. And as we receive responses, we put them up on our website unedited so that you can see exactly what the parties have planned in relation to this particular item. Yes, at the last meeting we had a representation from a resident from the city of Yarra. Since then, I've spoken with the Mayor of Yarra to confirm that we'd received that. She and the Council there are also aware of it and happy for, supportive, happy is the wrong word, in our efforts to put it in our call to parties, which not many of the other councils do, and to be able to follow up the item, and they'll keep in touch with us on that. And I'm not aware of submissions from any other parts of the City of Melbourne, but nonetheless, it's in our call to parties on behalf of all of our citizens anyway. So, Greg, does that give you an update on where we're at in the process?
Yes, thank you.
Good. All right. Lovely to see you here, and to Shelley as well. Thank you. Keith, I'm not sure if it mucks around with the recording, but do you mind just turning that one off again, just in case? Thank you. No other questions at this point from members of the public? No? Okay, thank you very much. Well, I'm going to call on Councillor Reese to assume the role of chair as we move into the reports from management. And you, Councillor Reese, will be chairing in relation to the planning portfolio, so thank you.
Thank you very much, Lord Mayor. There are two reports from management for consideration under the planning portfolio this evening. The first of them is agenda item 6.1, planning permit application TP-2018-774 for the property 132 to 138 Little Bourke Street, Melbourne. This is an application which has generated quite a bit of public interest, so I'm going to suggest to councillors that we receive a report from management. I'm seeing nods for that, so I'll call on Officer Jane Birmingham, Senior Statutory Planner here at the City of Melbourne, to present to council.
Right. Thank you, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and councillors. This is an application for a site at 132 to 138 Little Bourke Street. The applicant is Captain Obvious, care of track consultants. The architect is Baraka and Wright Architects, and the owner is 138 Chinatown Proprietary Limited. The site that you can see there, highlighted in red, is the subject site, has an area in the order of 454 square metres. Coors Lane is to the west and Little Bourke Street to the south, and it's within the heart of the Chinatown precinct. That's a view of the site at the moment. As you can see, it is a vacant car yard or car park at the moment, and there's a three-storey wall to the north and a two-storey wall to the east. In terms of the planning controls, it's in the Capital City Zone Schedule 1. It's also covered by the Heritage Overlay 507, which is the Little Bourke Street precinct, and it's subject to three DDOs and the parking overlay. In terms of gradings of the buildings pursuant to the Heritage Overlay, the site itself is ungraded, as are the buildings to the west and the east. The building to the north has a degrading. Going to the proposal, what the application is actually for are buildings and works associated with a restaurant, noting that a restaurant is an as-of-right or permit not required use in the capital city zone. The application is also for business signage, and a reduction of bike parking from the statutory rate of 8 down to 4. In terms of the proposal, you can see the layout of the ground floor here. Essentially, there's 150 seats on the ground floor. The kitchen facilities and the toilets and loading areas, etc., are contained in a two-storey building to the rear, and there's a further seating area along Little Bourke Street here. There's 150 seats proposed downstairs, 50 seats on the upper level, and a total of 250 patrons maximum. And you can see the upper level decking area here. Also part of this application is a sign, which is noted here on the corner of Coors Lane and Little Bourke Street. It's proposed to be a white neon-style sign. You can also in this elevation see the chain wire fencing that's proposed along both street frontages, where they're encouraging the planting of vines, etc., to create a green environment along the street frontages. The main entry to the premises will be from Little Bourke Street, where it's intended to reinstate an existing crossover, and there's a further entrance along Coors Lane as well. This is just a further view from Coors Lane, and you can see the height of this structure to the rear is 6.8 metres. In terms of giving notice of this application, most of the application was actually exempt from the giving of notice to surrounding residents, with the exception of this two-storey structure at the rear. The canopies and the fencing are actually exempt under the Heritage Overlay and the Design and Development Overlay. That's just a further view of the premises. Just further details of the signage, the proposed materials, the walls of the more substantial building to the rear are rendered concrete, and then just an example of the canopy and the chain wire fencing as proposed as well. And that's just a perspective or an image prepared by the architect of the application as viewed from the corner of Coors and Little Bourke. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jane. Are there any questions for Jane? I'll just ask a quick one. In one of the drawings there, it showed the crossover on Little Bourke Street still remaining. Can you just clarify what the status is of the Little Bourke Street crossover and whether there'll be any Bluestone reinstatement as well?
Yes, Councillor Rees. One of the recommended conditions of any approval is that the applicant reinstate this crossover as it's no longer required. There is a high level of pedestrian traffic along Little Bourke Street and we would like to see that reinstated with Bluestone, similar to the footpaths in the vicinity already.
All right. If there aren't any further questions, I thank you very much for
Jane.
And I will now call on Claire MacArthur, who requested the opportunity to address the committee this evening in relation to this matter. And Claire, I say welcome to Town Hall and request that you speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and Councillors. I speak for David Yu, who is a long-standing member of the local business community and Auswest owns several businesses and properties within Chinatown. We consider this proposal is totally out of context within the heritage and cultural context of Chinatown. The vacant site should be developed, but given its size, its prominent central location within the heart of Melbourne's Chinatown, we believe Council should not adopt the position that any development is an improvement. This seems to be the test applied by Council's heritage advisor, which in our opinion sets the bar too low. Indeed, Council's own heritage advisor notes the canopy, the fences, the facilities and planting is evidently not the same character as that of the heritage built form, even referring to this proposal as a pop-up, despite the fact that if permits are granted, it could operate on this site for decades. That is why we say not all development is an improvement and why we urge councillors to see why this proposal will start a decline in the historic precinct that will be difficult to stem. And Melbourne has seen the decline of other cultural precincts within the CBD, yet Chinatown has successfully navigated through various economic cycles to prove that the cultural support for this precinct remains strong. So along with the Australian Chinese community, you, the councillors of City of Melbourne, are effectively the gatekeepers of this historic precinct. What you allow in is equally as important as what you exclude. And we ask you to look through time to see how a decision in relation to this application will affect traders, residents, tourists and locals. Ironically, this proposal has been designed with the future in mind. With its canopy roof, less than 75% of external walls, it gets around Council's bylaws, which prohibit smoking in outdoor venues. Once the food menu is scrapped, this will morph into a bar. Why else would you use a canopy for a roof and cyclone fencing for walls? If you're serious about being a restaurant, you do not subject your patrons, you do not subject your revenue to the vagaries of Melbourne's weather. We urge councillors not to be fooled by the ludicrous suggestion that this will be a park. This is a privately owned hospitality venue. It is not a park, and it is designed to attract as many patrons as possible. In time, it will become a noisy, rowdy, smoker's bar, not unlike Section 8. And despite being gatekeepers for this historic precinct, it will then be too late for the City of Melbourne to intervene. We are not anti-competition, and we are certainly not anti-non-Asian businesses. This is a disrespectful, disingenuous application that must be rejected if Council has any desire to preserve the good work of the Australian, Chinese-Australian generations that have formed this precinct over the last 100 or so years. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Claire. I now call on Martin Chan to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome to Town Hall, Martin.
Hello. My name is Martin Chan. I'm a part owner of the Shark Fin House restaurant, which is directly opposite this site. So we have quite a number of concerns. One being is open, we treat that, well, I'm guessing this restaurant application will in turn turn into a open bar, similar to Section 8 in Tattersall Lane. So we're worrying about the noise and also drunkenness, which we know it always hand-to-hand with bars. We can see the same similar things with the smaller bars in the laneway at the moment, in the evening in particular, that when they have too much to drink or when the bar closed, they do stumble across Little Bourke Street and it's not a pretty sight. With this site being 250 seats, I can imagine the trouble would escalate rather than smaller problems. Also, we worry about the design. No proper roof, no proper wall, cyclone fans. So it is contrast to what Chinatown is at the moment. And I've been working in Chinatown for a long time, and I just don't see this blending in with our environment. We understand it's good to develop. The old car park wasn't a pretty sight, I must admit, but it did contribute to valet parking to a lot of our guests in Chinatown restaurants. So we hope the council can bear in mind the historical factor of Chinatown and maintain the good record that we have had in the past number of years. We are definitely not anti-competition. I've been trading there for more than 30 years. We've seen lots of business come and go. We're not afraid of another restaurant, not at all. So just rather than a temporary restaurant, if they could develop to a proper restaurant with walls and roof like the most of our traders in Chinatown is doing at the moment. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Martin. I now call on Gary Wissenden to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome to Melbourne Town Hall, Gary.
Thank you, Mayor and Deputy Mayor and Councillors. So Hanson Partnership represents 14 of the surrounding business owners, landowners, that all obviously have a significant concern and issue with this proposal. We note that in terms of this site, there are a number of sensitive land uses that are surrounding the site. We have in terms of the Mantra Hotel, and you might not know that the top levels actually include 48 permanent residences. So we have the manager for the Mantra Hotel here tonight. In addition to that, and that's the main property which then is directly to the west of the site. Then in addition to that, to the northeast, we have 136 one-bedroom apartments that exist in the rear half of 131 Lonsdale Street, again showing the sensitivity of the residential uses, and these are a permanent, not a temporary hotel one. And then further to the east, we have in terms of the Punt Hill serviced apartments, which are 84 there. So what this demonstrates is that there needs to be a balance achieved in terms of where you look at close proximity and the impacts that occur from a hospitality venue which is open on two sides and is clear to the sky. There needs to be that balance struck that they do not unreasonably impact on that wider and immediate surrounds, because as we know in the CBD, there is a lot of people sharing that one amenity and competing with all those land uses. And you've heard through our objections and also other people that there are a number of smaller hospitality venues that are small, contained with walls, contained by roofs, and will not result in the number of this or the amenity impacts that occur. Existing bars and restaurants are more intimate venues, historically with limited seating and contained behind walls and closed doors, and not large open venues such as this proposed. We note that it's a very prominent location within Chinatown, very different to that down a small laneway. And the appearance is not one that complements the heritage setting of Little Bourke Precinct. We have a heritage policy that looks at complementing in terms of these particular areas, and we say that the proposed use in its form does not complement that. We note with the material that has been submitted, there's been a lack of material, and that raises a lot of concerns with the people that we represent. Typically, with a licensed premises, you would have a planning report, cumulative impact assessment report, acoustic report, patron manager report, and none of that has been provided as this part of the application. Council has its own specific policy for licensed premises, and it brought that in a few years ago to make sure that large venues don't unreasonably impact on the amenity. This is 1.5 times size of that. We know the liquor licence application said it's 300. We're being told it's 250. And there's a concern about the lack of information that's being given to residents. And that ultimately makes landowners, business owners, landowners really concerned about such a proposal. Thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you for that, Gary. I think we have a question for you. Councillor Leppett.
Thanks, Gary. We received the formal objection, or at least the application to the Future Melbourne Committee, which I assume covers the same issues as the objection. It talks about the heritage concerns, built form concerns, the truthfulness of the vegetation matter and character. But verbally today, you've not spoken about those things so much. You've spoken about the amenity impacts and why a whole lot of supporting information wasn't provided. There's no use required, there's no permit required for the use, so on what basis are you asking us to refuse the application based on all of the verbal information you've provided to us related to use and conditions on use?
Yes, I appreciate there are limited permit triggers in relation to this particular application. However, in terms of the issues and concerns that you have from the wider community, and in terms of the planning scheme that has focused so much in terms of licensed premises, there seems to be a very large gap between what we have here and what is the intent of what Melbourne City Council looks at in terms of considering as licensed venues.
So no basis, but you'd like us to require it anyway?
Well, in addition to that, there's, of course, obviously the heritage concerns, which has been raised in terms of those concerns.
Thank you very much for that, Gary. I'll now call on Jovian Su to address the Future Melbourne Committee. Okay, thanks, Gary. In that case, I'll now call on Daniel Susan, who is very familiar with the how things operate here at Melbourne Town Hall. Welcome, Daniel. You've got 3 minutes.
Thank you. I'm joined here by Maz Salt, who's the permit applicant, and by Louise Wright from Bracco & Wright Architects. And they're here to answer any questions that you may have after the submissions. Thank you, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and Councillors, for the opportunity to address the committee tonight. And thank you to the officers for their diligent, detailed, comprehensive and sound report. Ms Birmingham has correctly identified the planning permit triggers, what we need a permit for, what we don't need a permit for. We don't need a permit for a restaurant, and this is a restaurant. It's not a bar. It's not a tavern. The licensed premises policy in the City of Melbourne only applies to licensed premises that require a planning permit. So we don't require a planning permit under 5227 for the liquor licence. We don't require a planning permit for the use of the land as a restaurant under the Capital City Zone. In terms of amenity, those matters are governed by, insofar as it's a relevant matter, by the liquor licence that will apply to the land. MAS has applied for a restaurant and cafe liquor licence, which is supported by Victoria Police, and which subject to an additional condition that will require no live music at any time. So it's only background music to be played on the premises. MAS has also agreed to restricted hours of operation through till 11 p.m. Sunday to Wednesday, and only 1 a.m. for the Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights. The only ground that the objectors have a right to address you on, the only ground that the objectors have an opportunity to comment on in relation to this application is the heritage aspect of the proposal. In terms of that, there are elements of that proposal that are exempt from notice as well. So the fence is exempt, the landscaping is exempt, the canopy is exempt. It's just the structure at the rear of the site that triggers the right to object to an application. And with respect, we defer to the Council's heritage advisor who has supported this application. And to the urban designers, indeed the urban designers who have been expressed, I think they've said, very supportive and excited about the proposal. This is the reuse of an open lot car park to create a restaurant in the capital city zone, to create some green space in the capital city zone. And we would respectfully request that the Future Melbourne Committee uphold the officer's very sound and reasonable decision and direct that a planning permit should issue. Thank you.
Thanks, Daniel. Are there any questions? Councillor Francis Gilley.
Sorry, I didn't get the name of the architect.
Hi, Louise.
I'm just because people have talked about the fence and that structure.
Yes.
Can you say why you feel it's appropriate or why you're excited about it? I'd just like to hear, because obviously there's some concern about it. I'd like to hear your...
Yeah, I can appreciate it's challenging and it's a sort of unusual form. We have the need to provide some shelter from the rain. It has a large 10-metre diameter courtyard open to the sky within that, and then a larger 8-metre courtyard open to the sky on the upper floor. And so it's a very thin roof. It's plywood with a rubber membrane. We were hoping to make it feel like a fabric roof, like a pergola, like an outdoor space. And so this lack of materiality is purposeful. It's meant to feel light. The trees, which, will mature in time, are really meant to be the main event and the vegetated space.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions from councillors? Councillor Oak, and then I'll come to you, Councillor Pinder.
Sorry. I'm clearly, obviously, the rules are the rules, and I understand that this isn't, there are only certain things that people can object to within the rules, but, the capital city zone is a vexed issue with respect to so many more people living in the city, and not having the ability to object isn't necessarily a good thing, but that's another discussion for another day. I, of course, agree that we need more green space and more greenery in Chinatown is something that Chinatown has been asking for and working for, so I'm not opposed to that. So my first question is around the park. How accessible is it to the public, or do you need to buy a meal to access the green open space?
We're open to the public at all times, very similar to everyone. We don't, make people pre-buy anything when they come in.
Oh, so you can go in and enjoy that space without necessarily being a restaurant patron?
Absolutely, yeah. It's counter service, so we won't even ask anyone what they're doing until they come and speak to us at the counter.
And again, I know that in theory it's not an issue with respect to the rules, but how do you propose to manage the noise when there isn't any containment through the fence and, the concerns that we've heard from residents nearby?
Two ways. Under the liquor licence, the controls on the background music noise, there were very specific controls on what the level of noise is that can be generated by that premises and through the hours of operation. Those are the two primary methods of containing and controlling noise. And those noise impacts, because they're dealt with under the liquor licence, are enforceable by Victoria Police.
And this isn't necessarily my question, but it's come through a lot of submissions. But so is there an intention to just become a bar?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. No, Section 8 keeps getting used as a comparison for this, but I make the point that I started Section 8 16 years ago when I was in my late 20s. It's been a very, very long time since I started a bar, and this business is a reflection of my own personal trajectory as much as anything. So it's very firmly intended to be about food and wine and about the area rather than anything else.
Could I add? I have been drawing some very expensive kitchen equipment.
Councillor Pinder.
This might seem like a crazy question, but I kind of recall there was a service station on that plot many, many, many years ago. Daniel, probably before you were born.
Before my time.
Is that correct? And if so, then will there be contaminated soil that you're going to have to deal with, obviously depending on how deep you dig and all of that.
No, we're not proposing to dig the surface mm-hmm. of the car park. We're proposing to resurface it, mm-hmm. And the plantings will occur above ground rather than okay. relying on...
Well, the tree, large trees have tree pits, yeah. so that small area of a tree...
We'll replace that soil. We'll take the soil out and replace it with new soil
so
for the purpose of the pit.
Our people of Melbourne won't be exposed to any contamination as such?
No.
As far as you can see. Okay.
Just... Councillor Riley.
My question is that in Chinatown the footpaths are not very wide and we have a wire fence. Could you explain to me why you would choose a wire fence?
Me?
Sure. Yeah, sure.
The way that we're using the wire fence is different than you might imagine a typical cyclone fence. We're just using the fabric of the interlocking woven wire, I suppose, without the structure. We hang that from the roof edge. So the intention as an architect or as a design element is that it feels like a curtain. We have done that on other projects, and so I suppose we would say it's not always the material, it's how you use it, and it's also an effective trellis for greenery, which we intend to plant on. Thank you.
Councillor Louis.
Councillor Rees.
Councillor's getting warmed up now.
No, just... There's many things being said about it being a pop-up. I was just wondering, what sort of time frame is the business intending to be there? Is it a pop-up or is it a... Because you're talking about... Sorry,
I've never described it as a pop-up, but we have a short-term lease of 3 years. So.
Okay, because why ask is because you're talking about the growth of the trees and the planting. So,
yep. So in terms of the planting, the intention is to plant semi-mature trees, so at 1.5 to 2 metres in height. They're gums,
red gums.
And in terms of the plantings, though, the plantings will be a selection of ground covers, climbers, creepers, and they'll come in at... medium maturity as well, so there'll be an established landscape from the beginning, and then over the course of 1 to 2 years, there should be a significant amount of greening.
Councillor Oak, I think you said you indicated you had a further question.
Only because I'm intrigued. What happens in winter? Are you planning on lots of heaters, of which I'm concerned about heaters, because obviously from a sustainability perspective, but what do you do in a Melbourne winter, or even the downpour, which we are going to have more of? Due to climate change?
It's quiet. It's as quiet. That's what happens. Not as many people come in. That's okay. Our business model is to support that. You know.
I have a question as well. Most of mine have been covered by the very good questions from councillors, but I just wanted to ask about this point that's been made about queuing along Little Bourke Street and the narrow footpaths. So I do note that you've got two entrances proposed to your venue, but can you just talk us through how you would, you know, let's, you know, if your development proceeds and, you know, your business is successful, how would you manage a crowding on the footpath on Little Bourke Street?
Well, I guess, you know, if we're lucky enough or fortunate enough to have queues waiting to get into the venue, then we have, you know, the staff and management procedures in place to be able to move the entrance around and make sure the footpath is clear, as we do with all our other venues.
So in that circumstance, the Coors Lane would become the primary entry on when it's queuing, when there's the requirement to queue or to provide for that service. During a Thursday morning breakfast trade, we're expecting that there's not going to be that many people. People are going to be coming in off Little Bourke Street as the primary entry.
All right, if there are no further questions, of which there's been many, I thank you very much for your presentation to Council this evening. Now, I believe there is a motion attached to this agenda item this evening, which is... I apologise, Councillor Gilley.
I've got some questions for management. Is that possible?
Yep, of course. Jane Birmingham, did you want to... return to the lectern, please. Sorry, Councillor Francis.
Sorry, three questions, Jane. One is, how long has that site been vacant?
I believe, Councillor, that it might have been a car park for about 25 years,
yeah.
But I'm not entirely certain.
Thank you. The second thing is, in terms of the concerns about from a restaurant to a bar, what are the restrictions if that was to occur? Mm-hmm. Are there ways of repealing licence or... So how do we manage that? I'm unaware.
Yeah. So, Councillor, there's two aspects to this. One is the planning and one is the liquor licensing. At the moment, that what they've applied for is a restaurant which doesn't require a planning permit. Should they morph into what is typically known as a tavern, we have planning enforcement teams that can go out there and monitor and respond. If we found that they had morphed into something different, they would require a planning permit for a tavern, and they would need to go through a whole process of applying for a permit, advertising, probably coming back through the Future Melbourne Committee. It would also require a different type of liquor licence. So at the moment they're applying for restaurant and cafe, which is the typical restaurant licence. They would probably need to come back and apply for an on-premises licence, which is that more typical of a bar.
And the last thing is with respect to it being a public space, we had this, I mean, I had this concern about the flats down on the Yarra. You can say this is public, but actually, why are officers... Why do you think it can be seen as public? There's a fence all the way around it, there's a door, you go in. My perception is everyone's going to walk past and go, I can't go in there unless I purchase something. And that's not to say your intent isn't correct, it's just... Why do you, as officers, see that that could be used that way?
Yeah. Councillor, I mean, there's no question that it is a private site and they can do what they choose with a private site. However, it has the appearance of giving something back to the public because that fencing is quite lightweight. You can see through it. There'll be planting, there'll be greenery, and the entrances, I think, are quite wide. So, you know, there's views through the site, and, I mean, it probably comes down to management, but there would be a sense of probably being able to sit in that space and enjoy it, albeit with a coffee or something.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Francis. Councillor Francis Kelly. I'm going to now, as the Chair of Planning, move the motion that is on the screen, and I'm looking for a councillor to second that. Thank you, Councillor Leppett. I will speak briefly to this matter. Look, I'm certain that there is not a person in this room who doesn't love Melbourne's Chinatown. My children's favourite meal is dumplings. And the Shanghai Dumpling House on Coors Lane there is one of our favourite places in the city. And we regularly queue along the footpath there because we want to get in and enjoy those dumplings. And I've probably lost count of how many times for either mum or dad's birthday I've been to Shark Fin or other places. So I think we all know the street well and the precinct well and love it very much. Of course, the key issue that's before us tonight is the application of the Melbourne Planning Scheme and the heritage overlay that applies in this part of the city. And the key issue is the appropriateness of the built form that's been put before us and how it aligns with the existing heritage context. Having looked at this matter carefully, I've come to the conclusion that it's fairly clear that the built form that is proposed here is compliant with the Melbourne Planning Scheme and does meet the criteria that is required on this site regarding heritage. It's important to note that we do not have the power as councillors to stop a development because it is not Chinese or of Chinese character. And as has been noted, there are a number of shops along Little Bourke Street, like the vintage sellers, like the Ugg Boot shop, which in fact don't have that character. I've also been around planning and development in this city long enough to remember a decade or so ago there was concerns about the encroachment of Chinese shops, restaurants into the Greek precinct along Lonsdale Street. And again, much as many people in the city were concerned that the uniqueness of the Greek precinct may be lost by those Chinese stores going to that part of the city. There's no law that says that can be stopped. I also think that there are a number of aspects to this particular proposal which actually will make a positive contribution to the precinct. I think the fact that the architects, Baracco and Wright, B&W, are very much distinguished and awarded architects, and I think the design they've come up with is quite innovative. It should be noted that B&W were given the responsibility of curating the Australian Pavilion at the Venice Biennale as a sign of the quality of the work they do, and I do think that they will bring that to this particular site. I think it's also a positive that the crossover along the footpath in Little Bourke Street will be closed. I think the use of the two entries points is something that can manage crowds if that ever comes to pass. And I do think the creation of a new green space, albeit in a restaurant setting, is a positive for this precinct. I have looked long and hard at some of the concerns that have been raised, and I do think the concerns are legitimate for being raised. I want to go very squarely to probably the one that's come up the most often, and that is that this is a two-card trick, that the applicant is seeking to get permission from the Victorian Liquor Gaming Authority for a restaurant, you've got a permit for a restaurant as of right, get a permit from us, get planning approval, and then down the track try and flip this into a tavern. And so while I wouldn't want to preempt a future decision that I or other councillors would make, I can say categorically tonight that I would need a lot, like a lot of convincing that would ever be an allowable or positive thing for the precinct. So I think at the end of the day, we need to take it on face value that this is going to be a restaurant with all the associated conditions that come with that, and it would be a very, very unusual day at Town Hall that we would ever approve a change to it becoming a tavern. So taking all those things into account, I am happy to support the motion that is on the screen. Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Chair. I agree, maybe not on the likelihood of a different sort of permit being granted, but on the basis of the decision before us today, yes, I think the decision is actually quite clear, but I sympathise with those who have seen what's on the agenda today, have seen a planning permit application being advertised and might not immediately understand that the use that is being proposed does not require a permit. And so a lot of those conditions and considerations we'd normally give in association with the permit for use aren't actually part of the decision we're making tonight. So all of those amenity impacts are not considered here. The conditions associated with the use aren't able to be applied because you don't need a permit for use. And, of course, we're not the commission. We're not granting a restaurant and cafe liquor licence. That is not a decision for us. But, of course, conditions can be put on that liquor licence if and when it's granted. May already have been granted, I'm not sure. There have been some valiant efforts to conflate the issues around amenity and use tonight. Gary, for having a bit of a go at you earlier. But all those issues around patron management reports and people calling on us to refuse this permit on the basis of amenity impacts, that's just not something we can do. If, as Councillor Rees has said, it becomes clear that this isn't a venue that is that isn't primarily for the service of food, that big commercial kitchen isn't going to be used primarily for serving patrons food, and if the conditions of the liquor licence and other matters become problematic, well, there are enforcement proceedings that can be followed. But what we can't do is refuse an application just because we don't believe the veracity of what's being put to us in the application. We have to take all applications on face value, and if there's clear reasons why we think that the wrong thing's been applied for, we can quibble with that. But this is in all ways consistent with what we see applications made associated with a use for a restaurant rather than a tavern, and so we can't just second guess that it's really a tavern and therefore it should have a permit and knock back a permit on that basis. So the only matter that we can really consider in this debate is that of heritage, but we also have to consider that this site is ungraded, even though it's in the broader Chinatown Heritage Overlay Precinct. The heritage policy is very clear. It guides us on the extent of demolition that's appropriate, there's nothing to demolish, and the appropriateness of the built form that's going to replace it. The test is very straightforward there. What is going to replace it is of much higher quality than what's there at the moment. I understand people who have arguments around whether or not it fits in with the character of the place, but that's not actually the way the heritage policy is applied. Yes, the statement of significance for the heritage place is taken into consideration, but just because it talks about the Chinese history of this part of town, and that is incredibly important, doesn't mean that there's anything in there that would support refusing the application on the grounds that it's been made. Our heritage advisors backed it in. The applicant's heritage advice has backed it in, and I think we should apply the heritage policy in a straightforward way and back it in as well. I should also acknowledge that Section 8 is in the exact same heritage overlay precinct, and so there is precedent for ground floor, open air or quasi-open air venues of this type being supported inside the heritage overlay. The heritage overlay also can't dictate use or who owns a particular site or the vibe of the character. The way the heritage policy needs to be applied is well established in Victorian planning system. And really there is only a tiny reason why this is before us at all. One argument is that you could almost get away with full exemptions under a heritage overlay and not have to advertise this at all. You could argue that the side walls are fences, not walls, and the roof is not of a permanent nature. And the reason this has been advertised is that everything else you can be exempt from public notice and appeal, but not under the heritage overlay. And in order to be conservative, council officers have quite rightly advertised, compelled the application to be advertised so that we can invite objections based on the rear built form of the site, but that is the only basis upon which this has been advertised. That is how narrow the grounds are for quibbling with the granting of a planning permit today, I really do think, and so the decision before us should be straightforward. So I will be supporting it, but I fully understand the very real, completely justifiable concerns of objectors. They are very real concerns. But the fact of the matter is that particularly those amenity concerns are not a valid consideration for us in deciding whether or not to grant a planning permit, because the planning permit goes to buildings and works, a reduction in bicycle numbers, parking, something in there, I forget what it was, and under the heritage overlay. And it is quite clear that a planning permit should be granted.
Thank you, Councillor Lippitt. Are there any speakers against the motion? Councillor Lee Liu.
Thank you, Chair. So I've given many speeches in Chinatown. One of my favourite is probably we have the oldest Chinatown in Australia. I won't go through the history, but if you want to learn more about it, you can always go to the Chinese Museum, which is further up in Cohen's Place. And I think, in a way, this debate is good because it brings up a lot of that. It put that into focus. This is something that we, I think it was like Kevin was saying, 30 plus years. God knows when the next time we will actually get a chance to talk about this. As many people know, I support enterprise and commercial business because they activate our city. And I wanted to say thank you to Maz. Your story is quite amazing. When I was 20-something, I would never have had the foresight to do something like that. So I do want to acknowledge your contribution for Section 8, which I've been to many times as well. And regardless of, whatever decision we make here, I also want to thank the many people who've put in the submission. I would have thought a bit more because a lot of the verbal feedback that I got just walking around Chinatown is, quite substantive, and it might be, I think it might have been collated or anything, but would have liked a bit more. I note that, we work in a framework or structure and we have controls in place. But sometimes there are things outside of that we need to consider. We don't have to talk about the fence, but that's going to be visually, every time you walk past it, it's going to be visually there. And I think, to say, well, we're not going to talk about the fence, I think that's going to be a big issue. So first, a couple of things I wanted to raise. So based on my understanding that, no one really could remember what was there. For the life of me, I think, the car park business that was there, we've operated for 30-plus years, I really do hope that actually applied for a business accommodation, because to continuously trade for 30 years, that's quite... Sashway has a car park in that size, is quite impressive. I do hope that they do apply. And I note, the heritage and everything. Yes, it's not... There's nothing around that. It's off... great significance, but yet to me anything is within Chinatown is of significance, especially on the main road. There should be a high degree of emphasis, and I think because ultimately whatever that is facing the main road is going to be representing Chinatown, and which I'll go to the other point, which is the mesh points. I also note a lot of the struggle that a lot of the business surrounding the car park had before even this came up. Especially in Coors Lane. And I know that it wasn't been much discussed, but, those business will be affected in some way by this because, the patron or the customers are different. Some might enjoy a quiet dinner, especially the Japanese business restaurant towards the end of Coors Lane, and also Shark Fin, which is more of a kind of a family and also just a quiet time. For me, one of the biggest things is probably the metal mesh fence. It might work in Tattersall Lane, but for me, it just doesn't work on the main strip of Chinatown. But I do recognise that whatever we decide, we do need to activate that area, especially Coors Lane, because I think that's something that we need to really put emphasis on. And hope that regardless of the outcome, we can actually achieve that.
Thank you. Councillor Li Lu, are there any other speakers for or against the motion? Councillor Louis.
Thank you very much, Councillor Rees. Look, probably revealing my age a little bit now, but I do remember that vacant site for probably it's been over 40 years it's been vacant. I think we're all welcome, certainly, the any appropriate development that would go on that site. And I know I certainly accept Councillor Leppard's explanation of the planning controls, and certainly I don't disagree that it's certainly compliant in terms of the restaurant application. I think we have a great deal of respect for our officers, for Jane's presentation, also for Daniel and Maz being the applicant, but also some of the other speakers have some very valid points as well. It's not, I think, I hate this argument about arguing for whether there's a discussion about non-Chinese businesses going to Chinatown. I think they're all businesses are welcome. I mean, it's not about Chinese businesses or non-Chinese businesses. So I think it's about the structure. I think that site definitely needs a business on it, and definitely anything is better than the open air car park. But I have concerns. I concur with Councillor Liu's comments. The Y fence, and I think I spoke to Daniel earlier, the cyclone fence, it's not a major issue, but mainly the structure and the patron numbers that is in an open area in the heart of a predominantly very hospitality area. So certainly, I'm guessing that somehow this is heading to a different hearing, possibly at VCAT. But I'm hoping that the objectors, the applicant, probably can work together to try and see where there's a potential compromise that's possible. But certainly that is a great location. Certainly it's the heart of a very, very strong cultural precinct. But it certainly needs a business that can survive as well. And understandably, Melbourne's weather is difficult, but I'm not sure whether on heavy, wet, heavy, rainy days and cold days that having no business is going to be a good look for that environment as well, and also, weather is also good for the operators. So I'm looking forward to a business going there, but may possibly with a design of a structure not quite as we've got today.
Thank you, Councillor Louis. Are there any other speakers for or against the motion? Councillor Francis Gilley.
Hi, thank you. It's been really interesting. I didn't know that I had an opinion, but I now have an opinion. I've been in Melbourne 20 years. I've been walking down that street 20 years, and I've always walked past it and thought, why have we got a car park right in the middle of this place? It is really ugly. We're talking about a cyclone fence with greenery, with trees popping out the top. I mean, I'm sorry, I just don't. In terms of ugly, we've had ugly for 40 years. So we've had ugly a long time. It can't get worse. It's just a car park with bollards a bit in the centre of Chinatown. So, I mean, with respect, anything's better. And I think anything or something is better. Then I think I get it's different. But I actually kind of like that it's, I mean, I'm, for me, it's different. And you tell me it's nothing to do with us anyway, so I'm with that. And then the last thing is, what is it bringing? It's actually bringing green in the middle of the street. It's going to have trees. It's going to have a wire fence. It's going to be covered with green. You're going to walk past it. It's going to be green. It's not going to be an empty yard with maybe some cars in it. It's going to be green. The other thing is going to bring some jobs. Well, it was a car park. So, pardon? 15 jobs. Well, there's only cars at the moment, so that's 15 jobs, not 28 empty cars, right? That's better for the city than the cars. It's bringing up some diversity to the area, and I know, you know, it's predominantly a great area where we do get dumplings, but there's nothing wrong with diversity, and that's actually good for all businesses. Empty car yards, not necessarily. And lastly, is some life. And honestly, you know, that area, let's keep it vibrant, let's keep mixing it up, let's go for some diversity, and let's have some life. That'd be
Thank you very much for that contribution, Councillor Francis Gilley. Councillor Riley.
I don't know where the logic is in this one. I really am struggling with this. I've read it, I've looked and tried in my heart to think it could work. But for some reason, I keep coming back to what Chinatown is all about. It's about that historic Chinatown for local Chinese community, for us to be proud of, to walk down the street and enjoy that atmosphere of Chinatown. So where I absolutely dislike the vacant site, like all of us, I just can't grasp this particular proposal being in that spot. As we've spoken, I don't like the three-year lease. I'm very concerned about what it will be or could be. I worry about the residents that are right around it, the noise factor. It doesn't matter how hard you try to keep a noise at a certain level, 250 people make a hell of a lot of noise on a Saturday night or during the course of any night. I'm not opposed to it being a restaurant. I am opposed to the way it's being built. I really would like something on that site, but I just don't think this particular structure is right for Chinatown. So I'm not going to vote for this proposal. And I do accept what other fellow councillors have said. There's all the rules are going out the window with me tonight because everything that councillors have said, especially Rohan, is right. There isn't a real logical reason not to vote for this, but my heart is saying it's not right for Chinatown. Sorry about that, Councillor.
Thank you, Councillor Riley. Are there any other further contributors? Lord Mayor.
I think we're going around the table.
Is that what's happening?
Obviously, there's a lot of passion for this precinct because we all feel very protective of it. It's a very important part of our city, but we have a conundrum here. We have a vacant block And we all want to see it activated in some way within this fabulous precinct. And we want to see vibrancy, and we want to see it used in a way it can contribute to the vibe of this precinct. On the other hand, the owner has negotiated a 3-year lease, and 3 years really isn't a period within which we could possibly expect a tenant to make a major investment in something that's very permanent. It just doesn't. That's the conundrum that we're facing, and the balance that we're all trying to struggle to find here in terms of outcomes. I accept absolutely the advice of our officers and the comments from our chair and deputy chair of the portfolio in relation to what is to be considered tonight, that it is all completely within the planning scheme and what is being sought, and we can only assess it on that basis. We can't assess it on the fear of what the objectors think it could become. But those fears are definitely noted here this evening. It's also been stated this is not what Chinatown needs. And again, unfortunately, that concept of use is not within the parameters of what we are considering this evening. I echo the concerns of all of us, and we're really taking the application at face value, which is what we have to do, and we would hope that there is no purposeful avoidance of accountability or ulterior intent or motive here. It's certainly not something, if we did that, we could be here all night thinking of what they might be, so we just can't go there. As I said, we're all very protective of Chinatown, and this has attracted a lot of attention, this application. But I really think the 3-year lease, the fact that we're looking for vibrancy and activation, the other side of that is that the 3 years gives all of the objectors and other people who are interested in this site an opportunity to think about what other uses might go there, start negotiations with the owner and or the current tenant, and see what might happen, because 3 years actually, in terms of building something more permanent, it would probably take 3 years to make that happen with going through applications and then actually delivering. So that 3 years really is a very short time, but still gives time to plan for the longer term on what people might want to see on that very important space there in Chinatown, because the permanency issue seems to be the main point from the objector's point of view. But from the applicant's point of view, they've only got 3 years to make the most of the site under their current lease. And it seems to me that's what they are trying to do by bringing that activation to the site. So we will be watching with interest to see how the site plays out. I suggest that your neighbours will be even more vigilant than the council. Nonetheless, everybody will be interested to see that if this goes forward tonight, that all terms are complied with in accordance with the restaurant permit that's being sought. But I do know and can see that the development complies with the planning scheme, that really it's important that the council applies that planning scheme consistently and in accordance with those rules. And I believe that if we weren't to do that, then the applicant would be obviously within their rights to appeal to VCAT and would most likely be successful in that it does fall within all current requirements of the scheme. I also know that all of the objectors also have the right to take this to the next level if they feel that they've got solid grounds or have a desire to do so, and we'll watch that with interest. But that balance and that conundrum is really what we're talking about tonight, and for me, it very much sits within the fact that this falls within the planning scheme and therefore it deserves support.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Deputy Lord Mayor.
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, probably not too many doubts that this is going to VCAT in my book, but I support Councillor Riley in her comments, except for the one about the rules going out the window, because I think if we're headed towards VCAT, then we need to be quite careful about respecting those rules. And when you look at the fact that this is almost totally compliant with only really one grounds for objection, and that is around heritage. So I want to focus on heritage. I don't think that it's right to sort of cherry-pick rules and perhaps, you know, seek to identify gaps in current rules as a means to actually object. And I certainly don't think we can second-guess an applicant's ultimate motive and say that they're going to apply to become a tavern in sort of a few months' time. So I put that absolute to the side, and we assess this application as it is before us this evening. And I can understand, Maz, and I can understand your frustration probably at hearing some of the commentary tonight. And I think I applaud the work that you've done so far in this city, and obviously Daniel's work is absolutely first rate. But when I look at the cultural significance of the Little Bourke precinct and the fact that we can't actually compel infill development, what would have been great is if that we saw a building that actually contributes to that heritage character, that streetscape of the Little Bourke precinct, but we can't compel that. That's not something that we can actually do. We can't compel infill development. In fact, some cases we actually do the exact opposite. We try and turn underutilised places into public open space. But this isn't a public open space. As much as we talk about its accessibility, it is in fact a restaurant, and that's how we've got to look at this. So I think we've had a lot of talk about the materials, the character of the canopy, the fence and the facilities, and while they're not grounds for objection, they are grounds to look at the character of this application and what impact it will have on the Little Bourke precinct. And I think that it will impact the streetscape of the Little Bourke precinct. And the argument that any development is a better development than a car park is an easy one to make, because I absolutely agree with it. But again, it's not a grounds for us assessing the heritage impacts of an application that just any development will be a leap forward. So I do have absolute sympathy for the applicant in the fact that this complies just about across the board. I do think this probably will end up in VCAT. I just want to pick up the point that we should trust our heritage advisers, and in just about every case I would, and I certainly respect Councillor Leppett's knowledge in this area far and above any knowledge that I have with respect to heritage. But heritage advisers get it wrong, and they do so quite often. So we are right to look at the application with our own fresh eyes, take all the information before us, and then make up our own mind, taking into account that those heritage advisors offer much greater expertise than ours. So I don't think that that going against our heritage advisors is wrong in this instance. So I wish the applicant all the best. I thank all of the submitters for your submissions this evening, but I'll object to this application as it stands.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Councillor Pinder.
I'm going to come at it from a different perspective, not so much from heritage or building or architecture, but from a people perspective. And I believe that notwithstanding, any activation is better than a car park. I have difficulty in actually, I guess, seeing this particular structure and operation right in the middle of our treasured Chinatown. I think it's the experience that Chinatown delivers to not just Melburnians but also visitors, interstate, intrastate, overseas, our international student cohort as well. So be it Chinese New Year or a Saturday night's dinner or me traipsing down Little Bourke Street for my acupuncture, I just don't think this proposal fits into such hallowed ground. And it, you know, we need to be preserving and fostering our Chinese culture into the future. So that's my view.
Thank you, Councillor Pinder. Councillor Oak, did you want to make a contribution?
It's not often we all speak, but that's good that we have. Obviously asked lots of questions, but they were really just responding to submissions that we'd received, but I would like to say that I support the recommendation and I support the officer's assessment on the grounds that they could assess it, and I think that they've done the right thing in assessing it within the rules and within the aspects that we're meant to be assessing it on. I am in no way really wanting to make a comment. I don't think it's up to me to talk about the cultural aspects from a Chinese perspective, but I think that actually there is a huge opportunity for the proposed design to actually bring some new vibrancy to such an excellent space. I think, and again, it's not for me to necessarily comment on anyone, but from my perspective, I've spent a lot of time in restaurants outside in Asian countries, and so that in terms of the vibe, I would have thought that, you know, actually an outdoor restaurant is actually quite aligned with a lot of outdoor restaurants in a lot of cities across Asia. But again, I'm not in any way going to question other people's perspectives of what that might be. In terms of the fence, I actually am going to the recommendation in front of us, and I thank our urban landscapes team for their contributions to the report and the conditions or the recommendations around the planting. That is all so that the plants can actually cover the fences and become this amazing green oasis, if I read it correctly. So if the recommendations are adhered to, then there's even more chance that this vision that the applicant has will be a reality, because there will be this amazing green on the fence and you won't see the cyclone. You'll see the cyclone metal. You will actually see greenery. And having this spectacular tree in the centre of Chinatown, I can only, I'm looking at obviously experts of Chinatown right in front of me here, and we've spoken at great length about how amazing it would be to have trees in this space. And I've spoken to colleagues here about how amazing it would be to have greenery and space in this exact location. So I think it's quite funny that we're now actually looking at an almost tied vote on whether or not we should have greenery in this space in Chinatown when we've had this conversation quite a few times. So I'm only one vote and only one perspective, and in no way have the 40-year relationship or even longer with the Chinese community. But I actually, I love Chinatown. And I love the vibrancy, and I think that this actually will be a good contribution, and I believe that the applicant is a good citizen and a good neighbour and would work with the people who are perhaps concerned about their intent, but I believe that there is probably some good opportunity to actually be a new member of the Chinatown Association and contribute to your many, many ideas. There is actually a lot of positivity in the application that we have here tonight. So I said I wouldn't speak too long, but I have, and support this, and I actually hope that we can get through the potential VCAT process that a lot of people are concerned about, and we actually get on with celebrating Chinatown and a new tenant in this space.
Thank you very much, Councillor Oak. So I think we've had 16 people speak to this matter this evening. Isn't Town Hall a wonderful place? As the mover of the motion, I have the right of the last word. One thing that has become apparent to me from this discussion is that I think Chinatown could benefit from a master plan and from some further thinking about exactly what we do want to see happen in some of these spaces throughout Chinatown, and that could be something that the City of Melbourne could work on with people like Claire Martin and David Yu and Martin Chan and Gary and many of the other people who submitted to us tonight. So let's take that conversation offline, and that would be something that I would hope the Victorian government would also want to join with us on, because as has been said many times this evening, I think all of us are very committed to Chinatown and Little Bourke Street and making it be that special, special place that we love so much. One final question from me. Keith, if the vote is tied,
Does the chair have the casting vote? Oh, great. Okay, well, let's put the... I will...
No, it's the chair. It's the chair.
Keith, clarification, it's the chair of the portfolio.
The chair is Councillor Rees. The chair has the deciding vote if it's needed.
Okay. All right, well, all those in favour of the motion, please raise your hands. I'm going to count that as Councillor Leppett, Councillor Oak, Councillor Rees, the Lord Mayor, Councillor Francis Gillie, all those against the motion, Councillor Louis, Councillor Lee Liu, Councillor Riley, the Deputy Lord Mayor and Councillor Pinder. So that is a tied vote, and as the Chair, I will declare the motion carried. All right, let's move on to the next agenda item, and that is agenda item 6.2, which is a Ministerial Planning Referral, TPD-2010-9C, for the property 695 to 699 Latrobe Street Docklands. And I'll just wait a moment for the room to clear. All right, this matter is for the property at 695 to 6, an application for the property 695 to 699 Latrobe Street, Docklands. Would Council like a presentation on this agenda item? I'm taking that as a no, and I'll now call on James Pearce, who from Fender Katsalidis, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter, to speak for no more than... So, Lloyd, you want to go? Yep, I'm comfortable with that. So, Lloyd Elliott from Urbis, you know the drill. You can speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome to Town Hall.
Thank you very much for indulging me this afternoon and that change in order. I figured James is the more exciting speaker that you want to hear from. So, Chair, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and Councillors, thank you for your time tonight. My name's Lloyd Elliott, Town Planner representing Salter, and we appreciate the opportunity to present this amendment to the approved scheme for a new mixed-use building at Docklands. You would have seen from the officer's report that the primary change here relates to the architecture of the building, and James Pearce will present on that shortly. But I just wanted to draw out a couple of salient planning matters which I'll touch upon. Firstly, hotel changes, and secondly, internal changes and build-to-rent model that Salter are wishing to achieve on this site. So some time ago, Salter signed a hotel management agreement with Indigo Hotels. This will be their first hotel in Melbourne. They currently have one under construction in Fortitude Valley in Brisbane. So that resulted in a change where we had to increase the room numbers and offer more amenity spaces for the hotel guests. Complementing that change also came through the build-to-rent model that Salter wished to explore on this property. Obviously, that allows Salter to have a diversity in asset products across their portfolio, but also it required us to have a different approach to the residential product that we were putting through. Build-to-rent requires long leases, and we needed to look at a difference in residential product and also to look at improvements to bring the apartments in line with BADs that had been approved since the original permit. We also wanted to look at improved community amenity within that site. So this will allow the residents to have the opportunity of using the hotel facilities, including the pool, the gymnasium, and all of those kind of assets that have worked so well in other sites, including the Sheraton Hotel up on Little Collins Street. So we think that they're really important aspects that have led to part of the change in this from a planning point of view, and something we wanted to bring to the councillor's attention. We also had quite positive engagement with the planning officers throughout this process. As issues have been raised, Salter have sought to engage and look at changing the design response, as you can see in the officers' report. So all of the conditions that the officers have put forward, we're in support of. We have no issue with those. And the changes that are suggested will be explored through those conditions and confirmed through those conditions. So that's all from me before I hand over to James, but happy to take any questions.
Thanks. Lloyd, I've got one question. Is there any change to the mass of the building as a result of this application?
The
Sorry, and the height as well.
There are some minor changes to the envelope of the building height because we're now introducing an undulating form, so it has peaks and troughs. But importantly, there are no changes to the approved impacts of that height onto adjacent Marvel Stadium. That's something that we've worked through. The building mass essentially replicates the same. In parts it's eroded, in parts it's slightly increased, but it, for the most part it's the same building mass.
And so what impact do those changes, minor as you say they are, have on overshadowing in that precinct?
They have no net changes beyond what's already approved, in particular to Marvel Stadium.
Thanks for that, Lloyd. Are there any other questions for Lloyd? No. All right. Thank you for addressing us this evening. And I'll now call on James Pearce from Fender Katsalidis to address Future Melbourne Committee. Welcome to Town Hall, James.
There we go. Thank you, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor, councillors. Thank you for this opportunity to present our proposal this evening. Our proposal is for the site at the corner of Latrobe and Harbour Esplanade. It's a significant site, the beginning of one of our main CBD grid streets. It's a site that's on the water's edge and so therefore visible from the harbour promenades as you look back to the city from Docklands. It's a prominent corner site deserving of a building that celebrates this significance. The current scheme, not this one shown here, but the current permitted scheme has three rectilinear stepped forms facing Harbour Esplanade. This proposal is an amended design that we feel is more responsive to the opportunities of the site. It's a soft, undulating sculptural form referencing water. It holds and marks the corner, but importantly, it also turns the corner, and so the building is now really facing Latrobe Street as well as Harbour Esplanade and the water, and we think that's a significant improvement. The detailing, materiality and texture increases as the building hits the ground, providing a human scale and finer grain as it interfaces with the public realm. Since the submission of the design and through this amendment process, we've worked closely with the Melbourne City Council to improve the design even further. For example, you can see on the ground plane here, we've removed the services from the, which I think I can point out, yeah, on the Latrobe Street there and create a greater activation to the street frontages. The landscape zones carefully integrate the level changes that Melbourne Water has required us to have within the public realm so that we can mitigate from the higher levels inside to the lower levels of the street. Lowering canopies, another work through with Melbourne City Council to the street fronts for a more human and intimate scale, increasing the materiality and integration with the streetscape and the public realm. The curvilinear form has freed up the internal planning for wider apartments. There's fewer of them, but that gives them a greater amenity and improvement. And the facade has been developed. We started with something like this, moving to further articulate it with notches separating the three forms, and then introduced some timber fins to relate to the trees and the landscaping and to give the form a base to the overall building. Responsive to its maritime location, the soft undulating sculptural form will reflect the mood of the surroundings from golden sunsets through to grey and brooding as the next cold front approaches. We believe that this is a building that will radiate the mood and character of the area and will be a great addition to Docklands. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, James. Any questions from councillors for James Pearce? All right, thank you. No, there aren't. So, James, thank you very much for addressing us this evening. There is a motion that is about to appear on the screen that I, as Chair of Planning, are happy to move. And I just note to councillors that this contains an amendment in it from what you may have seen earlier. I'm looking for a councillor to second the motion. Thank you, Councillor Leppett. So, look, it It's fair to say that this particular site, I'll speak briefly to it, it's fair to say this site has a very, very long history here at Melbourne Town Hall. I think more than a decade there has been considerations of what might occur on this site, and councillors going back over several councils have had a look at it, and I'm pleased that we are now hopefully very, very close to the finish, and with Salter and Fender Katsalitis on board, we're going to see what's before us tonight moving ahead. There is, I think, a lot to like about this proposal, and I'm very pleased that there has been a change to aspects of its design. I do think it's quite an elegant building that will hold that corner well, and so it should be an elegant design, because this is a really postcard location in Melbourne. If you think about what Melbourne looks like from the water, looking towards the city, this building right beside Marvel Stadium is going to appear in all the pictures of this city. I can imagine newsreaders, as they read the nightly news, will have that picture of Melbourne behind them, and this building will be right beside the newsreader, and which makes it all important that we get the design of the building right and the facade right. And so to that end, I have put up this slightly amended motion, which does just highlight the new condition, which requires a further detail around the facade strategy. I want to emphasise that I think Fender Katsalitis have done a terrific job getting the design to where it is now, but I do think it does need another layer, a final flourish, because this is an iconic site and we need an iconic building on that site. As part of that further round of discussions, which will happen with the urban design team here at the City of Melbourne, I'd also ask that you give consideration to the lighting of the building, because, again, with its sort of elegant shape and with appropriate lighting, I think it could make a real statement about Melbourne. Again, something that's appropriate for an iconic location. On that note, I am happy to commend the motion to councillors and call on you, Councillor Leppett, to speak to the matter.
Thank you, Chair. I agree. Obviously, the same building envelope essentially is being pursued here with a significantly different facade strategy. And yes, we should be pushing for even further detail on that strategy. So I support highlighting that condition, and thank you for talking about it, Chair. We refer to the various conditions in the report, but we probably don't need to. We could just say that we advise the department that we support it based on the vibe, because that's how we assess planning applications now.
Thank you, Councillor Lippitt. Are there any other speakers for or against the motion? No. In that case, I'll put the matter to the vote. All those in favour, please indicate by raising your hands, and I declare that carried unanimously. I now call on Councillor Oak to assume the role of Chair of the meeting in relation to the environment portfolio. Thank you, Councillor Oak.
Thank you, Councillor Rees. There's one report from management for consideration under the environment portfolio. It's the draft Moonee Ponds Creek Strategic Opportunities Plan. Would councillors like a presentation? I'm not seeing anyone even looking at me, so no, I don't believe there is a presentation. And hopefully, I know that Councillor Leppett is focusing on this one now. Right, great. No questions? I will call on a councillor to move a motion.
Chair, can I move a motion, but an alternative? It was distributed earlier today. There it is.
Great.
I'll just pause for a minute so that we can see the extent of the changes.
Can we just scroll just so we make sure it's the full? Oh, great. I'm happy to second that. I assume that you'd like to speak as the mover. Councillor Leppett?
It's just slightly different to the version I submitted in, so I'm just checking that it's all there.
I think it is.
I'll just wait for the second page.
Map of the maps.
Great, thank you. All right, thank you very much, Chair. I've snapped back into a better mood. Apologies, colleagues. This has been a six-year journey for us, but the Creek has suffered since settlement, and I know that everyone loves it when I disappear down a history rabbit hole, so strap in, I'm going to do it again.
Should I put the timer on?
You feel free, I'll be quick. The fascinating thing, I think, about Port Phillip Bay, the old Blue Lake and the Mooney Ponds Creek is that we can accurately track its trajectory, its course, and its different ecologies through 7,000 years of oral histories. And we can match that against sea level changes, and we can match that against vegetation changes in the Port Phillip Bay. That is a fascinating history. But the history post-settlement as well is also fascinating to me. The second we settled Melbourne, noxious industries became focused on the Mooney Ponds Creek. It was known really quickly in Melbourne as a dead place, especially Blue Lake and the mouth of the Mooney Ponds Creek. And then in 1872 and 1873, the state government commissioned the Lowlands Commission to try and remove all of the swampy aspects of the lower reaches of the creek and make the land habitable. But the land's never been used for residential. It's never been earmarked directly for industrial or even commercial. It's always been associated with either the port, the lower reaches that is, or for many, many decades, it was the informal tip for Melbourne City Council, and there was petition after petition made to this council in the late 1800s to find one space for a formal tip. And of course, they chose it near the Mooney Ponds Creek, but that didn't actually stop the rubbish flowing out further on. And there's some fascinating histories about just how toxic it was. I won't read out any of the gruesome details at the moment because I promised to be brief. The rerouting of the Mooney Ponds Creek and the Yarra River in 1872 has also changed the trajectory of the creek, but it wasn't until 1890 that the Railway Coal Canal fundamentally changed the width and the use of the creek. That's when the creek immediately silted up 1 year later, and it was another one of the state government's absolutely failed designs. I'm not going to go through the 1900s. My point is that right since settlement, this creek has always been in the too hard basket. We've never been able to either remove the swamps and make it habitable or deal with the noxious industries in a way that can manage future generations and strategic planning. It's always been in the too hard basket. Forgot to talk about the bubonic plague and the rats. I'll do that another time. So I've only been here for 6 years, but I've tried every year to get this out, and it is so exciting that it is out at last. We can turn this creek into the jewel of the inner west of the city of Melbourne. We can convert this creek into something that reflects the incredibly varied and rich history, pre-settlement, post-settlement, shared histories, because there are so many stories to tell, and it used to be the most ecologically exciting and variable parts of Greater Melbourne. It could be fascinating again, but of course there's a lot of different reasons why it is under intense pressure at the moment. So many different major transport projects, so many different infill projects, Council's own Macaulay area, and we're going to have the Arden strategic planning coming up as well. So now is the time to get all of our ducks in the row. State government agencies, whether it's the VPA, whether it's VicTrac, whether it's Melbourne Water most importantly, and of course the City of Melbourne, and finally get this right. It matches up the rest of the creek's watershed. The different councils upstream have done the same sort of thing here. We have an alignment with what we'd like this chain of Ponds Creek to look like, and I think the time is right to get that done. I've made only minor tweaks to the motion here. It's to ask for additional information to be circulated as part of the consultation from tomorrow. All of the background information explaining the flood impacts on the lower reaches of the creek and why we absolutely need to do this, and as well as some suggestions for incorporation into the final version. I'm so excited to see what comes out of that consultation, and I commend the draft. Thank you to all of the officers who have worked on this, not just this immediate document today, but over many, many years trying to get that cooperation, that collaboration between different versions of government and inside the City of Melbourne. It's fantastic.
Thank you, Councillor Leppert. I, as seconder, will speak and clearly share the excitement, the anticipation, the trepidation of Councillor Leppert around not only, you know, here we are again talking about this amazing asset, and I can see officers rolling their eyes because they're sick of me saying that, but I know they're doing it respectfully, but I agree that the opportunities for this space, and it's articulated so well in this draft that we're going out for consultation about this idea of chain, the chain of parklands and the new open spaces and the wetlands, and you know, it would be just so exciting. I cross the Moonee Ponds Creek every day to get to work and back again, and too often it does look like a rubbish tip, or you know, or it just looks really industrial and really not a nice space. But also when it floods, you can actually see that opportunity that you see in the document. I mean, when it floods, you clearly see it's a flood plan, and we need to use an integrated, connected, nature-based solution approach to solving it, so we don't have another stormwater drain like the upper reaches have. But we certainly we need to use nature for its purpose and well and harness that, and that's what this opportunities paper will allow us to discuss in greater detail with the community. So I think you know, the pictures and the images about what it could look like, I hope will re-engage the community who have been engaged many times with our vision for this space, but I hope it will re-engage them and realign our collective purpose to turn it into a much needed open space for this area and for the current but also the future populations. Really important, it's not just about people, there's amazing biodiversity there as well. The number of birds that already exist you know, along the reaches and other species are quite amazing, and the fact that we could bring back and revitalise that space from a biodiversity perspective is really exciting as well. So again, I support all of that. I like that this consultation, whilst we're only a bit player, it's a strategic document about bringing everyone together. I think it's important the changes that Councillor Leppert has made to make it really clear about where this does sit within all of the other conversations we've had about Moonee Ponds Creek, but also who are the players and what are the roles that they're playing. But as I said, importantly, that whilst we're going out for more consultation, that this input will be feeding into the Victorian Planning Authority's implementation plan for Moonee Ponds Creek. So we are aligning as best as we can, but let's hope that we can accelerate the action and actually see this, the vision being realised, because it's very much needed and will be very much loved if we can get it right. So congratulations to everyone involved so far, and hopefully we can just push it a bit further and actually get it done. Are there councillors who'd like to speak against the motion in front of us? Lucky. Are there any councillors who'd like to speak to the motion? For or against? No. Well, would the mover like to close? I will put it to the vote then. All those in favour, raise their hand. Sorry? Oh. I call that carried unanimously. Thank you. I will now call on Councillor Pinder to assume the role of chair in the meeting in relation to the People's City portfolio.
Agenda item 6.4, coordination of grassroots initiatives for people sleeping rough. I've got a few questions, so I was wondering, Angela, would you please go to the mic? Angela, I'm interested in what sort of controls are to be initiated. So let me explain. For example, the report centres around the myriad grassroots initiatives that pop up every day out of the sheer goodwill and altruistic efforts of ordinary, everyday people. Is this correct? And what is the definition of a grassroots charity?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chair. You're correct. The report is about grassroots charities, and that's the term that we've used here at City of Melbourne. We understand that to be a pop-up charity, a mobile street-based after-hours operation. They're not registered homelessness service providers, and those service providers are registered through the Department of Health and Human Services. They vary in scale. They could be an incorporated entity, but essentially they're reliant on volunteers, goodwill, concerned citizens who are wanting to do something in the homelessness space.
So, in other words, this is purely about pop-up type initiatives, and in any way it won't affect our engagement with some of the major mainstream organisations such as Big Umbrella, Salvation Army, Front Yard, City Mission, because I'm really asking you for a sign-off that it won't affect them, because and that they won't have to surrender to guidelines or any other processes.
Yep. So the guidelines are not designed to intervene in the work of mainstream organisations, many of whom we work with quite intimately and have very good relationships with.
Yeah.
These are grassroots pop-up operators that we often don't have really good, strong relationships with, and in fact we don't understand a lot of what they do. It's important to know that this is not a permitting system. We're not wanting to restrict what people can do, but rather we're wanting to harness the goodwill that's out there in community to bring that together so that we can really affect change for our homeless population.
Just a couple more, Angela. Can you outline the process for contracting the homelessness agency referred to in the report? How does management see the process working? And will this be put out to all agencies that the City of Melbourne currently works with a request or a response, or is this going to be a tender?
Yep, it won't be a tender. We will go out and seek applications from existing operators who we know work well in this space with existing relationships that we have.
And I see in the paper we will be asking the Lord Mayor's Charitable Foundation, foundation for funding of $200,000. If this is unsuccessful, a new business case will have to be put up, obviously, and will this come back to council?
Yes, it will come back to council.
Okay. And just one more thing, can you clarify the timing as to our first batch, unrelated but related, as to our first batch of storage lockers?
Oh, yes.
160 of them.
we have just been advised that works will commence on the 25th of March and they will be handed over to the Salvation Army operational on the 2nd of April, and that's 160 lockers.
That's great work, Angela and Barney. Brilliant. Thanks, Angela. Anyone else got any other questions of Angela? No? Thanks, Angela.
Thank you.
Councillors, do you want a presentation on this agenda item? I'll move it, if I can call on a seconder. Thank you, Lord Mayor. Okay, so at present, councillors, there is no formal avenue for engaging with grassroots pop-up charitable organisations. And there are myriad initiatives that are coming through every day, particularly at Christmas time. There's no coordination about how these services are to be delivered throughout the municipality, nor when. So, you know, there's overlapping and all sorts of things happening. And the paper before us today has been drafted following extensive targeted community and stakeholder consultation, and is a report that covers for us the issues and some possible solutions. So today we're being asked to consider the proposed approach to the coordination of grassroots homelessness initiatives for people sleeping on our streets and to endorse two recommendations. So I really urge you to consider this very well thought through report that reflects a lot of hard work undertaken by Angela, Barney and the team. So thank you, team. Some background to this is since early 2016 there's been a significant increase in the number of people sleeping on our streets, in parks and other locations across the municipality. Street Count 2018 delivered for us 279 such people, and it was a bitterly cold winter morning. The 2016 Australian Census indicated a total of 1,725 people recorded as homeless within the municipality, and that was an increase of 925 from the 2011 census. So a huge increase, nearly double. And the response to this situation has been obviously significant from across a range of sectors, government, business and the community, agencies and the community. So therefore we've seen a rapid rise in the number of informal grassroots initiatives tapping on our door and pop-up operators all wanting to provide mobile goods and services to our homeless cohort, from meals, clothing, bedding and haircuts to showers and laundry facilities. And there's several tons of stuff that's being carried away weekly by our compliance team. So this comes with a lot of good intent and a vast number of good people, but there are challenges. So it's over to you, councillors, to consider this report and vote on it today. So I call on our Lord Mayor first, who has seconded it, to speak.
Thank you, Councillor Pinder, and I agree with what you everything you just said. So I'll just say that we really acknowledge and we're so grateful as a community to the efforts of individuals and small groups who want to help and make a difference on what is a very complex and top issue for us here at the City of Melbourne. And we're absolutely dedicated to making sure that the giving services that are provided can be effective, responsible and coordinated. That's what is at the heart of this initiative. The direct delivery of goods and services to rough sleepers done in isolation of the discussions and identification of the essential things needed for long-term impacts here, such as accommodation and outreach services to help people, our rough sleepers who might be dealing with other sorts of issues such as mental health, domestic violence, addiction issues. If those two things are done in isolation, then it severely impacts the nature of the good giving, if you like. But by and I think as Councillor Pinder said, the goods are often discarded once used, and it adds actually to the issue rather than helps, given also limited resources that we have that we want to spend on pathways out for rough sleepers rather than collecting goods that are no longer required. And of course, when we have these services being or goods being provided without linking them up with the organisations that can really make the long-term difference, we're absolutely missing the opportunity to create that impact. And in some ways, we could even be said that it's entrenching the rough sleeping because it's enabling and facilitating people to be out on our streets longer, which is not what anybody wants. And I'm not saying that's intended, but unfortunately, that's one of the consequences. So by connecting the organisations, we feel it can really make a big difference. I acknowledge the work of the officers in bringing this to us, and Councillor Pinder as chair of the portfolio in nurturing this idea and bringing it here this evening. And just note that while they can, they can be all good intentions, it doesn't necessarily mean there's going to be a good impact without bringing this together in a very coordinated way. And that's why I'm delighted to support it this evening.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Put that on. Are there any speakers against the motion? Are there any speakers, any other speakers for the motion? Councillor Gilley?
I was one of those well-meaning people. I remember being a stockbroker at about 22 and thinking, God, what a mess the world's in, and leaving my job and moving to Liverpool in England, spending about 12 years working with homeless people. And I think one of the things is we made lots and lots and lots of mistakes. And I think partly because, you know, that well-meaning was misguided often. And so we ended up perpetuating, certainly in the early days, and lots of the volunteer groups actually really, we did end up perpetuating. We were collecting sort of rubbish from people that didn't want it anymore and giving it to people who were poor, who were then living with somebody else's rubbish. And we thought that that was in some way supporting and creating equality, and actually it was just holding people in this kind of position of not acting or being able to change. And so I, you know, and I, how, you know, after 10 years we learned, and it became one of the nation's really respected homelessness organisations, employing hundreds of homeless people, serving homeless people around the country. I think what you've achieved, both in terms of your support for the officers, Lord Mayor and Councillor Pinder, and also, you know, the officers, you know, significant work over the last, particularly over the last few years, really focusing on this issue, means that you will be in a position to best support that, you know, good-hearted reaction that I had as a young man, but that other people, you know, lots of people have and want, and being able to direct that and get great value from it is going to be really important, particularly for homeless people. So I really, you know, really thank you, and we would have, it would have been made my life much easier if we'd had that kind of support. I think the other thing I just want to say, as we really acknowledge what we're doing here, is though that this is an extraordinarily ingrained issue that, you know, all of our activity we're kind of playing around the edge of, and that we, you know, we, it comes back to, you know, us asking ourselves as a nation how we will care for those who are most disenfranchised, and what we will do about housing, and what we will do about, you know, the conditions that support people who are in homelessness out of it, and some of the things that we're going to raise in our next issue in terms of asking the federal government to act on these issues. But with respect to this, thank you for all of your work, and you officers, and I really, really commend it.
Any other councillors wish to speak to it? Councillor Riley?
Thank you. I also would like to acknowledge the hard work that's gone into getting it to this stage. I mean, Melbourne is no different to any other city in Australia. We all have the same issue. We all have people out there that are really willing and hard workers wanting to help our homeless. But without a more structured approach, which we now are looking at, it is difficult to achieve, because what they're doing, they believe they're doing, is the right thing to do. But when you see all of these people just doing a little bit here and a little bit there, it doesn't come together. So I'm very impressed with the way this structure is now going to take place, bring the people together, and let's hope that we can make that huge difference, which is what we always wanted to do. And thank you very much for the structures of the little cupboards that they're all going to have, which we've waited so long for. It's wonderful. Thank you.
Anyone else want to speak? If not, I just want to conclude by saying thank you once again to the social investment team. And Barney, you know, you've been at the helm of this. Thank you very much. Great piece of work. And thank you also, Dean Robertson. You know, I know it's something like 1.6 tonnes of debris that you have to remove each week, sadly, but that is what we have to do when the city is crowded with this sort of stuff. And thanks, Angela, for coordinating this beautifully. Having said that, I will now put it to the vote. All those in favour? that's carried unanimously. Thank you. May I now hand over to our Lord Mayor, Sally Capp, to resume the role of chair for the remainder of the meeting.
Thank you, Councillor Pinder. Well, this concludes reports from management to be considered this evening. We have one item of general business to be considered, and that is 7.1, notice of motion. Lord Mayor Sally Capp, 2019 Federal Election Call to Parties. That's actually the title of the motion. And I'm going to move the motion, and I'm calling on Councillor Leppett to second the motion. Thank you. And in speaking to this motion, I wanted to note a few things. Firstly, that the relationship between cities and the Commonwealth Government has never been more important. As cities grow, and particularly in Melbourne's case as the fastest growing city in Australia, and the way in which cities operate to represent not just a number of citizens but scale of our economy and the issues that we're facing in our community, the role of cities in our nation is more important than ever. I note that Victoria accounts for 80% of, Melbourne accounts for 80% of Victoria's GDP and about almost 20% of the nation's GDP. So our necessity to have that direct relationship with federal government that sets so much in terms of important policy but is now increasingly also funding major programs that are not just delivered in our cities but then for which cities must take increasing responsibility for operating, maintaining and or dealing with the consequences and benefits of. So I've launched straight into why it's important for us to have that relationship with the Commonwealth Government. Part of that then is to very confidently and stridently set out as a city what are our expectations from a federal government as we go into a federal election, which really only reflects what is an ongoing and increasing dialogue between all of us as representatives of our city in different forums with the federal government, and this gives us an opportunity to bring together in one platform a number of the issues that are important to us as councillors in our roles, as chairs of portfolios in our roles, as representatives of our citizens, in our roles as citizens ourselves, in the things that are important for our future. I say that because the call to parties, whilst it sits under my name in terms of this motion, it's a reflection of the work that we've done jointly and which was expertly and diligently pulled together by Councillor Leppert, for which we are grateful, but it reflects a lot of that that hard work and momentum that goes on behind the scenes. For that reason, I'm going to touch on one thing that's near and dear to my heart, maybe two, just having seen Shelley again, but also there will be, in addition to Councillor Leppert as seconder, other councillors that may want to just highlight some of the topics that are relevant particularly to their portfolios or issues that they're particularly passionate about. But for the top of my list, it's very much about calling on the Commonwealth Government to agree that annually they will sit down with capital cities and with Melbourne to talk about projects that are city building projects. At the moment, the mechanism for that is City Deals, which is a mechanism that is not working effectively. I say that because we don't have one, but it's more than that. These city building projects should be a set course of conversation, negotiation and outcome that we have with federal government every year, given the significance and importance of our economies and our communities and the issues that we're facing. And so that's why we've added it in there. It could be everything from vital infrastructure needed to successfully manage growth and a lot of the growing pains we're experiencing, all the way through to programs that are important for creating those cohesive and resilient communities and everything in between. I think of affordable housing as another example, and also the way that we're looking at big urban renewal sites like Fisherman's Bend. So that's certainly in there and an example of what city shaping deals or programs could be and why we should be having those regular and deep and set discussions with Commonwealth Government. I note as well that we have agreed and worked with the East Melbourne Residents Association to include what has been, I think, really a long-running conversation but has intensified as we've also seen air traffic intensify. What we've discovered is it's largely unregulated, or those that should be regulating it aren't sure that they are or don't want to. This is a conversation that absolutely has to be taken to federal government and given due attention, and that's why these motions and initiatives initiatives of doing call to parties are so important so that we can get those issues that impact us locally but are actually regulated federally right there centre in terms of the conversations we're having. So there are a couple of examples. It's why I'm pleased to present and support this motion this evening as amended, as you can see on the screen up there. And I'm absolutely confident that everything in our call to parties are issues that not only deeply impact Melbourne now and into the future, but have relevance for the rest of Australia as well. And that's why it's important that we take leadership on these issues. That's it from me. Councillor Leppard, a second. Would you like to speak to the motion, please?
Thank you, Lord Mayor. You've explained the purpose of the call to parties brilliantly, so I don't propose to repeat anything that you've said. I did want to acknowledge, though, that the amendment came from East Melbourne residents since it was released on Thursday, so thank you, Shelley, thank you, others. Hopefully the rewording of question five now covers everything, because, of course, there is a dispute between CASA and Air Services Australia about who should take responsibility for what, and the way to fix that isn't to get a consensus between the two, it's to get the minister to rewrite the regulations. Now, that's pretty huge, and it does have not just national implications, but significant consequences if we're actually going to do this right. But cities need to take a leadership on this issue and say, there's a gap here, we need to get it addressed. So hopefully this is one of the many issues where we're not just asking parties what their position is ahead of an election, but we can continue going back to whoever does win the election and the minister of the day to say, come on, this is our position, you've really got to get on with this. This has become a safety, not just an amenity issue in our inner cities. So we'll do our very best. It was a pleasure to facilitate the process. I hope that we've captured 11 councillors' 19 questions relatively adequately. Lord Mayor asked councillors if they wanted to highlight their favourite or the most significant to them. I'll just do one, and that's question number one. Obviously, I'm delighted that, unlike the last election, that at last the electorate and, more importantly, mainstream media seems to be more willing to focus on climate change as a core election issue. It is absolutely appalling that our federal government has been asleep at the wheel on carbon emissions regulation or a market for it, as well as the chopping, changing positions on renewable energy with the massive opportunity cost that that has created. I know that we are just one small bit player in the scheme of influences of the two major parties and other parties contesting the election, but anything we can do to row in that same direction and put climate change measures front and centre is so essential for us here at the City of Melbourne. Either we keep global temperature rises to 1.5 degrees or we are not in the business of mitigating climate, we're in the business of figuring out how to move people, how to deal with runaway climate change that is going to completely decimate our cities. So that is, of course, the most important thing, and I hope that this federal election will be fought on climate change and not on who can be the meanest to which particular dark-skinned minority du jour.
Thank you, Councillor Leppert. Would any other councillors like to speak to the motion? Councillor Oak?
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I too thank all colleagues for contributing to this, and Councillor Leppert for steering us as he did in the state election as well. I think a lot of cities are looking at us and our call to parties as a way to get their interests in federal issues on, you know, out to the community and show that actually we do really need to have much greater dialogue. I will just note two, Councillor Leppard's already raised, but I think it's great that number one on the list is climate change, and just a nod to the tens of thousands of young people and their families that had to strike to get action on climate change on Friday. And wasn't that an amazing display of young people in our city? But it really shouldn't have had to happen, and they shouldn't have had to do that. And if we actually had a government that did accept the scientific consensus on climate change, then they wouldn't have had to do, wouldn't have had to skip school. And the second one on there is clearly something that's very important in Victoria at the moment with a recycling crisis as it is. Again, we need the Commonwealth Government to take their role seriously, and there is a lot that they need to be doing in this space, and you know, even the greatest efforts at the state government level around e-waste is being hampered by the lack of support at the federal level, let alone infrastructure and greater investment in that space. So I'll just comment on those two, important to show that we are here, willing to work with all levels of government, but they need to work with us too.
Thank you, Councillor Oak. Any other councillors like to speak to this motion? Councillor Leloup.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. And first and foremost, could I thank Councillor Leppard for collating all of this. And it's great to see you know, democracy at work, that we have different ideology, ideas, aspirations, and it's kind of, you know, been all in here. So one of the things for me is probably around the international students, and, you know, the biggest feedback that I've always had since I've got in, and also previously as well, is around employability. And, you know, this is something that we have addressed in this call to party. You know, it is our biggest export for Victoria. And there are many alumni who've studied here in Melbourne and who've gone on to great things around the world. And what a gift that is that Melbourne has given to the world. International students have really contributed immensely to Melbourne. And I think we should acknowledge the fact that they've chose to come here and live here and study here, you know, anywhere in the world, but they choose to come and live here. And the least we can do, I think, is to advocate for them. And if anything to go by from the last week's Lord Mayor Student Welcome, which is attended by Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and the councillors as well, you know, it is greatly appreciated. And I think, you know, I hope that we can achieve a lot more in this space, even though it's not an area that we are responsible for, but at least we can take a position and advocacy.
Thank you. Any other councillors wishing to speak to this motion? Councillor Frances Gilley.
Thank you for your work on this and also for our consensus. The one thing that's happened for me over the last week is I've been thinking about this and then, you know, just thinking about also, though, how we talk, how federal politics talks, is that while the things that we're asking for are specifically really important, you know, I can't help but think that it's actually not so much the policy that the parties choose, it's actually the way that they choose it. And so, you know, we started with Remembering Wellington, and yet we've seen, we've seen this kind of playing to kind of base politics that actually really separates people and creates this environment where I think we've seen some outrage. And I think we've seen that on climate change, that we give a voice to people who deny the science, and then you do end up with 20,000 kids, or, you know, 140,000 kids in Montreal, or whatever, that's 160 cities around the world, having to find a voice to remind us to go back to school and look at our science. Or you know, just last week, we see in the press and we see politicians defending, after George Powell's been convicted, actually saying, well, maybe it's not right, and yet there's victims on the other side of that. And then so I think we're going into a political conversation where it's really important for those of us who are in politics that do have a voice, or those that are in media that represent it, that we are careful about how we play this game. So I think I'm really grateful for the focus on the policies, but I think it's incumbent upon us to be really careful about how we do it. And the reason I'm saying this is because in the Herald Sun it said today, you know, we must, in their editorial, damning the torrent of hate. And then I think to myself, I have read those things from Richard Bolt now for years since I've been in this city, and you give those pages to people, and then we believe those things, and then you write something different. And I think we have to be very careful.
Andrew. Just confirm, Andrew.
Andrew, not Richard. Richard. Yeah, Richard's brother has done more on climate change than probably anyone else in the city. So thank you so much. Yeah, he really has been amazing on climate change.
We all knew who you meant.
Yeah, we did. But so I think we have to be really careful about who we give space to, who we allow to speak, and where we really need to have two sides of a story, because sometimes it really does hurt.
Thank you, Councillor Francis Gillie. Anybody else like to speak? No? Okay, well then I'm going to put this motion to the vote. Will all those in favour please raise your hands? That's unanimous, so I declare that motion carried. Thank you, councillors. Well, this concludes the items of general business to be considered this morning. No, it's this evening. We haven't been here that long. We haven't gone over midnight. But I'm going to ask councillors, we could still go over midnight if anybody has urgent business that they'd like to discuss. No? Okay. So that's no urgent business. I'm going to, as we always do, say we have a 15-minute period allowed at the end of our meeting for any public questions. And I'm looking at our 1, 2, 3, 4, 5... One question? Yes, please come to the podium and name and question would be lovely. Thank you so much.
I think a few of you know me. John O'Brien. I own unit 23 at 131 Lonsdale Street, Melbourne. And I'd just like to put forward to the councillors that there's been a really big impact on the decision tonight about this open paddock at 131, is it, to 137 Little Bourke Street, right? The biggest ratepayers in the area are the most to be affected. The Hotel Grand Chancellor, which has 170 rooms with a 95% occupancy. Then there's 134 residential apartments, which also forms a part of 131 to 137 Lonsdale Street, of which I've got a pointing saying that probably 90% occupied for 12 months of the year. Those properties are facing right on to this vacant property or space.
John, have you got a question for us?
Yes.
Good.
I'm a bit worried that we'll have a similar instance to what we've got with Lacey Place, with a leaking garbage compactor that has always got problems and has never fixed, number one. Number two was the secrecy of how it was put in there in the first place. And this is going to happen again with this paddock, as we've got at the front where we're going to have a restaurant and music. Has anybody in the council actually been up, I think it's Tattersall's Lane, where their other side is, say at 10 o'clock at night, and watch the rowdy residents that can be affected by every tonic that you might wish to name? And he had his heavies here tonight, excuse me for that, but the thing is that this is going to have a serious effect on the restaurant trade and everybody
John,
else, right?
Yeah.
50 seconds to go.
No. Sorry, John. There's a question in there about considering the garbage, and there's a question in there about noise.
Yes.
I think we covered the noise one, particularly given it's a restaurant, no live music, background noise only, closes at 11 and 1, and not dissimilar to other uses around that time. But I'm not sure we covered the one about garbage, but I know James...
Can I correct an issue, Madam Law Mayor? The thing is that you've just approved a karaoke bar in a part of this complex, which is was formerly the Frigate Bar of this brown building that's there, which is 131 to 137 Lonsdale, and it's two doors up virtually from the site. A karaoke bar, we objected to that originally. And it's been approved.
Point of order.
I think what would be great, John. Sorry, Councillor Francis Gillen.
I'd just like some clarity. Isn't it the case that you can't ask a question on a topic that's being covered in the meeting? I feel like there was a moment for this, and there were submissions that were received.
Good.
I'm just checking.
Good. Well, I think you can ask any question in public questions.
Anyway, think,
and look, what might be good, John, is if you want to write to me, and
yes,
and we can cover off any issues
for
you.
On behalf of the owners' corporation that covers
great.
The whole building, Mr. Hayden Grant is chairman of the hotel.
But we did make that decision this evening.
Yes.
It was passed earlier.
Yeah. And finally, with that site, it's the best rubbish dump in Melbourne. So I think that you might sort of
what,
take
the car
that on
park?
Board. Around that area.
Well, it's not going to be a rubbish dump anymore. Well, that's the good news.
Well, at the moment, it's shocking. It's really bad.
All right. Yes. Thank you, John. Thank you so much for coming. Appreciate your input. Thank you. Are there any other questions at this time? Shane.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I haven't been for a while, and I'd forgotten how entertaining it can be, so thanks, everyone, for a great show. Kevin, it's not often that you're here in a meeting and you make a contribution, so it was pretty special. Yeah. But my question is to you, Lord Mayor, or two, if I can. In September, you told Residents 3000 that you were proposing a residents panel, and you further went and said that you hoped to have something back before the end of the year. Can you tell me what progress is being made, if any, on that?
Good. Did you want to talk to this, or...?
Yes, I can. I'd be delighted to, Lord Mayor. Shane, you'll be pleased to know that I was in a meeting with some of the best officers here at the City of Melbourne today to work on this very idea. And so all I can say is keep the faith and watch this space.
Okay.
So there are... Yeah.
Thanks.
The concept is something that is being explored. I think there's definitely that. And there are a number of elements to it as well, Shane. And I think, Evan, there's a process underway in terms of understanding how we can streamline planning applications, and as we go into that, we're also looking at what are the communications we can do with residents on the other side as well, just to make sure everybody's feeling very informed and involved in the process.
Thank you. Lord Mayor, could you also reveal if there's any progress on your idea of the Highline Park?
Thank you, Shane. And there was... and Claire's not here this evening. I think she's gone. Oh, there she is. Oh, I can't see you, Claire. There was, as you know, an amount dedicated to looking at the concepts for this. And Claire, are you able to give us a bit of an update? Thank you.
Through you, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and Councillors. So we have had a co-design SHREC with a series of stakeholders that either own land or manage land along the north bank of the river and also through Docklands. So that's included a series of state government agencies, including Parks Victoria and Development Victoria and the Department of Energy, Land, Water, and a series of council officers and some consultants and design experts in Melbourne. And that was really exploring what the opportunity could be. And from that co-design charrette is we've developed a very high-level concept plan about what the opportunity could be, looking at the whole area from Birrarungma through the north bank of the river, through Docklands, and then linking up with one of our key public space corridors that we looked at tonight, the Moonee Ponds Creek catchment.
Shane, yes, so that's where we're at, and it's progressing.
Work in progress.
Work in progress, that's it. Well done.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, go for it.
Can I ask officers what the citizens panel actually is? Because I wasn't a residents panel.
Sorry, I should have provided more detail. Speaking briefly, so citizen panels are another way of engaging residents in the review of planning applications and development ideas for the city. Something that the Lord Mayor asked me to investigate, and it just so happened that I was talking with officers at the City of Melbourne about the proposal or the idea today, and so I guess I was just saying that this is something that is being discussed with officers at the City of Melbourne. Nothing more, nothing less.
No, it's just a concept. All right. Any other questions from the public or councillors? John, is it a question?
Yes.
All right, come on up.
I was dismayed, and I'd like to ask the council why a planning permit closes on a Sunday. The 132 to 138 Little Lonsdale Street closing day for the planning was Sunday the 17th of March. Who could come to the council offices
Evan,
on that
are you
day
able to comment? Answer that question, please, for John? Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, and John, through you, Lord Mayor. So when we give notice of a planning application, the statutory period is 14 days. The council cannot make a decision during that 14-day period. Sometimes that 14-day period may end on a Saturday or a Sunday. An applicant has to provide a declaration. However, any submissions can be made until council makes a decision. So often there's more time available beyond the dedicated date that's noted on the notice that's posted on the site or that's within the letters that are sent out to residents.
Thank you, Evan. All right, I reckon that's just about done our 15 minutes, and it's been excellent, and it's great that we make the most of the opportunity to do that. Thanks to everyone who's been involved. Well, that brings us to closure of the meeting. I wish to thank members of the public, management and staff for their interest and attendance at the meeting, and I declare the meeting closed at 7:59 p.m. Thank you so much, everybody.